Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. From Building Bridges, the worst immigration bill in a century.
And now with us is Chung Hua Hung, who's the executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition and an incredibly draconian immigration bill passed the House of Representatives that could turn really millions of undocumented immigrant workers and their family members into criminal felons. The Senate Judiciary Committee began a final discussion, which is called a markup, of a 305-page immigration bill by its chairman, U.S. Senator Arlen Specter, a Republican from Pennsylvania. And, well, let's find out a lot more about all of these things with one of the preeminent scholars and activists in this area, Chung Hua Hung. Thank you for being with us.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Where do we start?
Yeah, exactly. I think immigrant communities feel really under siege, under attack like never before. You know, we're talking about a wholesale criminalization of over 10 million immigrants and their family members, just extremist proposals that most people thought were pretty fringe ideas have really gained momentum and have passed as legislation in the House. When I think it's really, you know, it's really, these are not policy ideas. These anti-immigrant ideas and proposals are completely just driven by anti-immigrant, very, very conservative sectors in our society who's not interested in solving the problem that we have of this unworkable immigration system that's just really hurting millions of families. And they're going in the exact opposite direction of just piling on, just criminalizing and penalizing people. And that's, you know, their solution is let's deport everybody, which is not a solution at all. So it's a pretty, we've entered a pretty crisis times in the immigrant communities.
The House bill, of course, is an abomination. Is there any chance, I mean, is the Specter bill in the Senate carry over these same provisions with regard to making people felons who are immigrants? Is it any better, and what are the chances in the Senate?
No, unfortunately, the Senate side of the debate is, although it's expected to be a little more rational, I think we have a pretty bad bill to start with. So that's why we're really mobilizing our communities to change that. It still does not address some of the most fundamental issues that immigrant communities have been demanding. And I think the most salient issue is, you know, does it provide a path to citizenship for over 10 million undocumented immigrants, or does it criminalize and, you know, continue to push them underground? And the Senate bill, I'm afraid, does not have a path to legalization, so it does not fundamentally do anything to solve the problem of having so many second-class members of our society, you know, among us, to whom our country is basically saying, you know, you should work hard, pay taxes, and, you know, like stay in the lowest rungs of our economy, but you're not welcome in our society. We're not going to give you rights. We're only going to ask you to put out. That's the message that immigrants are getting. Second very important reform that needs to be part of these, you know, discussions is the fact that millions of, you know, immigrant families are separated from their loved ones because our system is just not working. People are stuck in the backlogs, or they're not able to invite their children or family or, you know, close family members to join them. And it's just families are torn apart and just going through unnecessary sadness as a result. A couple more provisions that are not addressed are very important, is to make sure that we have worker rights and civil rights, that none of our enforcement schemes or policies don't end up discriminating against immigrants because of their status, or putting them in a vulnerable position as workers, or bringing down the working conditions and wages of, you know, workers who are already here. So it's a complicated piece, but currently the current proposals make workers even more vulnerable to exploitation instead of putting in safeguards that give them basic labor protections.
Chenghua, why are they more vulnerable?
I think workers, first of all, you know, immigrant workers are overrepresented in the low-wage sector because they come from, you know, much poorer countries in many cases and are taking jobs that, you know, are not taken by a lot of the existing workers here. And then if they are subject to exploitation, you know, it could be because they, you know, don't speak English or because of racial discrimination or because of their immigration status. A lot of employers actually threaten their workers with calling in the immigration authority if they don't accept the working conditions. So it's a very, it gives employers so much power over the workers if unscrupulous employers use that against them.
The center of gravity of this debate has gone increasingly to the right, I don't even know whether to call it the right, over the last year and a half. So the right now, the center of gravity is to the right of Bush. What's going on here? How do you explain this?
I think it's partly kind of this post 9/11 environment in which I think this very very bad malicious politicians are taking advantage of people's legitimate fears about terrorism and presenting these kinds of anti-immigrant attacks as the solution to our fears about terrorism. And unfortunately, that's worked with some people. And so everybody wants to be, you know, tough on immigration because that's how you become tough on terrorism. And, you know, who opposes being tough on terrorism? So I think it's people are taking the easy way out by conflating terrorists with immigrants. You're really doing a huge disservice to a very complex policy question, which is the question of immigration reform, which really should be tied to, you know, I think the basic problem here, the choice that our country has is to pick between two competing visions. One is a vision of America that embraces immigrants and all of their contributions in the economy and the local community and in the healthy future of America. The other one is deport them all, exclude them, criminalize them, they don't belong here vision, which also comes with the kind of police state that it would take to try to deport everybody. And so we have, you know, although we're very concerned about the right kind of taking over this issue and the politicians basically using this, you know, they call this issue now the gay marriage issue of this year, right? They're using it to motivate their base, solidify support for their political careers. But I think because, you know, the reforms that immigrant communities are putting out is just the right thing to do, and it's just better for America and better for immigrants, that in the end, you know, we have the upper hand. So I think they're being just very short-sighted by using these anti-immigrant logic and rhetoric.
Now, there are a range of proposals. There is, of course, the one that was passed in December by the House of Representatives, which really takes an aggressive law and order approach, focusing on things like border control and crime and deportation. And then there is the Senate bills, which include Specter's bill, which would increase guest workers to serve business interests that they say can't run without immigrant labor. And then there is the McCain bill, which seems to be the least onerous and draconian.
Right.
Help us parse out and figure out what the dialogue needs to be as progressives. If we're looking really at the McCain bill, what amendments need to be inserted into that to make it far more liberal and responsive to immigrant communities that have always, through their backbreaking labor, built this country?
Right. First of all, you're totally right that on the very, very, like, you know, on the scale of terrible to, you know, excellent, you know, the Sensenbrenner bill is really on the very, very end of being the most terrible that one can imagine. I think
it's the House bill that passed.
It's the House bill. I think it's trash. It does not even deserve a policy response, right? And that's why I think you saw people, you know, in Chicago last Friday, you had 300,000 immigrants coming out protesting in the streets. And I think you'll see more of that here in New York also. So that's on that end of the spectrum. And then President Bush's bill looks good to some people compared to that. But he doesn't have a bill. But his idea is that of guest workers, basically not giving equal rights or never giving a chance to adjust your status to become a full participating citizen. No path to citizenship. Again, just 6 years of temporary status while you work here. So that's pretty bad. That's pretty anti-immigrant. And President Bush's bill, just that also needs to be thrown out, or his proposal.
And Bush thrown out also.
Right. That's up to our very smart voters to decide. And then you have the, I would say the current Senate bill is kind of a clumsy attempt in trying to find a politically expedient compromise between the Bush proposal and the House bill, which is totally the wrong thing to do. You know, why rush to a compromise? Let's just look at the basic policy components that needs to be part of reform in order to solve this problem. And so the Kennedy-McCain bill at least presents a comprehensive framework, right? It identifies the right areas in which we have to figure out policy solutions. You know, it has a path to citizenship. It has a part about expanding legal channels of immigrating. It has a section on, you know, cutting down on family backlogs. You know, it's unfortunately a little weak on worker rights and civil rights. And so, you know, we will continue to call for strengthening the bill in those two areas so that immigrants don't have to trade off their rights for a chance to get legalized. So, you know, in order for us to get to that place of debate where we're really talking about solutions to changing the system to make it work for us and not to victimize people and exploit people, I think it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of organizing in immigrant communities to fight for our rights. And so, you know, we're organizing a lot of buses to go down to Washington, D.C. on the 28th of March. And, you know, we're planning a whole bunch of activities. And we welcome, you know, supporters and participants and immigrants in this fight, because time is now. Unless we can, you know, change the debate right now, I think we're really headed towards, you know, we cannot afford this kind of a continuation of anti-immigrant attacks.
Chung Hua, how can people find out about how to get on the bus and go to Washington on the 28th so we can put to shame that small number of 300,000 people in Chicago that came out? How do we join in the struggle? And in the 60 seconds that we have remaining, why should people care about immigrant communities? Because believe it or not, Ken and I, when we do programs like this, still get some awful negative and backward responses, really, from people who say, you're taking our jobs, you're pitting one low-income group against another.
I think that's what makes it really tough, that it's not like a clear-cut issue to a lot of people. But in the end, the reason people like myself, an immigrant who grew up here and feel like I belong here and I'm contributing to my community, you know, as a mother, as a community activist who is willing to, you know, work side by side with native-born Americans here to pursue social justice and economic justice. We in the immigrant communities are really powerful allies, envisioning and bringing about a more just society. And we want to do that in a way that not only strengthens us or that obtains rights for immigrants, but we want to do that in a way that raises the civil rights and worker rights standards for everybody in this country. And so please support us. Please work with us. We're happy to engage in explaining, you know, some of the complexities of it. So chance is going down to D.C. with us. So you can call, find out how you can go.
Give us that number.
The number is 646-240-6792.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Number one more time.
646-240-6792.
We've been speaking with Chung Hua Hung, Executive Director of the New York Immigration Coalition. We'll see you on the bus. Make sure your legislators know that we want a just immigration proposal and that we understand that it's immigrants who've built this country and must be welcomed here. Let's go to David Robex and tear down those borders and have some justice. Chung Hua, thank you very much.
Song goes out, I guess, more now than ever to the Arab American community, but I wrote it more with Latin Americans in mind. Of course, so many folks are in the same boat, hopefully not soon facing indefinite detention for being immigrants. The clouds gather in your forests, drift to my desert town. I think of far off places as the rain is coming down. But you're bent down in the fields, picking fruit there from the vine. And it ends up on my table as it moves on down the line. The moon shines brightly in the night sky. The river flows from south to north. With the changing of the seasons, the birds migrate back and forth. They say that you can't come here, not in the light of day. Somebody has got plans for you, starve at home or hide away. Will we open up the borders, tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal? Watch the giant as it falls. So much travels across these borders. So much is bought and sold. One way goes the gunships. The other comes the gold. Free trade is like a needle, drawing blood straight from your heart. The border's like a prison, keeping friends apart. Will we open up the borders, tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal? Watch the giant as it falls. Hear the stockholders cheering. The world's getting smaller. Hear the drowning child crying. Why are the fences growing taller? Some whisper in the shadows, while others count the dollars. Some have suits and ties, others chains and collars. Will we open up the borders, tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal? Watch the giant as it falls. Fortress walls come down. May we meet our sisters and our brothers. Stand arm in arm there in the daylight, no longer fighting one another. Will we stand together? For therein lies our might. Will we understand these words? Workers of the world, unite. Will we open up the borders, tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal? Watch the giant as it falls. Open up the borders, tear down the prison walls, declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls.
Abu Jamal. Walls. Throughout the tides and turns of history, some people have erected barriers against the feared foreigners to protect their lands from those who would threaten their peace. History has shown the mighty efforts of nations and empires to erect barriers against the ever-present other, yet it has rarely shown success. In human history, few societies have erected as formidable a barrier as the Great Wall of China, constructed during the Qin Dynasty around the 3rd century BC, and both rebuilt and expanded for 1,000 years thereafter. The wall was built to defend against the nomadic hordes of the north, but the land was repeatedly invaded by the nomads, as the wall provided little real military use. In the latter years of the Roman Empire, the Emperor Hadrian ordered the construction of a massive wall in Britain. The wall marked the northern boundaries of the Roman Empire. Fragments remain of it today. After the division of Germany into East and West, the Berlin Wall was erected to protect the East from Western contamination and to keep Easterners from fleeing to the wealthier West. Less than 30 years later, it was reduced to rubble, its bricks and slabs now used as museum pieces to reflect a bygone era. In the Middle East, we see the erection of concrete and steel walls to mark the separation of Israel from Palestine. The Israelis call it a protective barrier. The Palestinians call it an apartheid wall. Now, legislators in Washington are fast-tracking a plan to build a wall across the expanse of the Mexican border, all 1,933 miles of it. Walls are funny things. Although the builders see them as evidence of state power, they often come to be seen not as emblems of power, but as harbingers of weakness. They're markers of national fear, not symbols of confidence. The Qin Dynasty, which sought to unite various peoples into one, began a work that would continue for generations. But the hated foreigners, the fierce nomadic Mongols of the north, would clash against the wall, go over and around it, and for a century under the Khan, sit on the imperial throne in the heart of China. The Roman Empire began as a city that welcomed outsiders and indeed used the ideas of those many visitors to build their city-state. Hadrian's Wall, over 73 miles long, marked the end of expansion and a wish to preserve the accumulated wealth and privilege on the inside from the hungry hordes looking in. Rome, once the mightiest of empires, went into decline. And as the sacking of Rome in 410 AD by Alaric, the Gothic king, shows, walls offered little protection. The Great Wall of China was 1,500 miles long. Hadrian's Wall, 73 miles long. The Berlin Wall, over 29 miles long. The Israeli barrier wall will surround the whole country. The Mexican border, being 1,933 miles long, logic suggests, will require a wall longer than the Great Wall of China, Hadrian's Wall, and the Berlin Wall combined. Walls, even great ones, are barriers reflecting fear of the outsider. They are not achievements of confidence, but actions of people deeply anxious about the barbarians beyond the barrier. They reflect the closing and decline of nations and empires, not their expansion or strength. The events of 9/11 unleashed waves of national anxiety and fear in many Americans. National myths in times of great conflict often die first. The idea that the U.S. is an open nation that welcomes the people of the world is fast eroding. Foreigners, especially those from Islamic countries, are now seeking other venues to study, to play, and to live. For they know that the legend emblazoned on the Statue of Liberty's base, the Emma Lazarus poem about welcoming your tired and your poor, doesn't refer to them. It's just another wall. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal, author of We Want Freedom, A Life in the Black Panther Party.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
And this has been a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
May these fortress walls come down. May we meet our sisters and our brothers. Stand arm in arm there in the daylight. No longer fighting one another.
Will we stand together? For therein lies our might. Will we understand these words? Workers of the world, unite. Will we open up the borders? Tear down the prison walls. Declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls. Open up the borders. Tear down the prison walls. Declare that no one is illegal. Watch the giant as it falls.